Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Pelo de Borghesis.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Even with the rains.
Yeah. Oh, somebody threw some beads up here. Huh, interesting.
Oh, wow.
All right. Yeah, cool.
From left over from the Gasparilla, I guess. Yeah.
I think so. yeah. Okay. Well, it is February already. February 4th. The year is almost done, and here we go. It's another All About
getting
Wine.
Into it. We got
it. Yeah, it is.
This week, actually, until the 15th, we're going to have nasty weather in Florida. And the reason is the state fair is going on. Mm-hmm. And every year when the state fair starts, and it starts today, we get a front goes through, and it dumps rain, and then it cools way down, and we'll get two or three other little fronts go through over the next week and a half, until the 15th. Then the 15th will get here, and it will start being really, really nice. And then by, I don't know, the end of February, the pitchers and catchers report to spring training, and then it's summer. But the state fair always dictates nasty weather for some reason.
Yep.
You know?
It's like you almost guaranteed every. I thought there was sun last weekend, but I don't know. It's just, maybe during the daytime. I thought there was sunshine last Saturday, but I don't know.
I don't know. It just seems to always work that way. So once we get the state fair out of the way, then we'll get back to our typical beautiful Florida weather.
Yep, definitely. Let's see. So we got the show going. Do that. And we have a guest tonight.
We do.
And I'll go try to call him, I guess, and see what happens.
He has a Cub Scout group that finishes on Thursday at 7, so he should be.
Or give him a few more minutes or something. I don't know.
Yeah, let's give him a couple of minutes here. I mean, we never tend to have. I'll tell you what. Here we go. Drinking trends in 2016 to watch. It says the American wine drinking is a bit of a slump. It increased last year for the 22nd year in a row, but only by 0.2%. Come on, people. You're going to have to pick that up out there now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we're drinking less, just that we're doing other beverages and stuff like that. Consumption of wines have declined for the fourth year in a row, but people are starting to drink hard cider and spirits. So the drinking is actually there, but wine is down. A lot of Prosecco, which is the sparkling wine. A new wave of wine fans will reach drinking age pretty soon, they're saying. The millennial generation is getting ready to do it. And the new sippers called Generation Z, who were born after 1995, are already starting to show interest in wine. And in 95, they're turning 21 this year. They're old enough, according to a survey by Wine Intelligence, which was published in Decanter magazine. It says, today there are 93 million regular wine drinkers in the United States, making up 40% of adults. By 2025, there will be 104 million.
Mm.
So, that's from 93 million to 104 million. Cider is on the rise, they're saying, plus some other stuff here. But it's I'll get into it a little bit more probably next week. But just give you a little tease here. We are we're drinking, but not as much. But Generation Z, they try to think of something. Now, what they're going to call the next generation? They've already used X, Y, and Z. So that should be interesting. I hope I'm around for one more generation. Just see what they call them. And let's see, is Mike jumped out there? I think he did. He jumped out there and he's getting Brent. Our guest tonight, yeah, that's who he's got. That's who he's calling there. Very good. Our guest tonight is Dr. Brent Trela, or Trela, I think. I'm not sure. He's from Whispering Oaks Winery, which is located in Oxford, Florida. I was up in that area Tuesday. I noticed a sign. I drove over to Whispering Oaks Winery and met Brent and his wife, lovely wife, B, who was running the tasting bar. Also, I got a chance to taste the wines and a chance to wander around the back and see their operation and all that. Very nice setup there. Stainless steel, big stainless steel tanks. They do blueberry. That's all they do is blueberry. He's got a list of blueberry wines that with the blueberries right there on the ranch. And so that's all they are doing right now is blueberries. They pick the blueberries, and he makes five different blueberry wines. I think he just got a new one. I think he's got a chocolate one now that he's added to it. But he makes blueberry wines, and he's going to be, looks like he's ready for me. So let me bring him on to the show. And hello, Brett. Thanks for joining us tonight, and welcome to All About Wine.
Hi, Ron. Thank you.
I was just telling everyone on the program, listeners, that you do blueberry wine. You have blueberries right there on premises, and you do blueberry wines, and that's all you do is blueberry wines. Except for your new one, which you have gotten some chocolate into it, but we'll let you tell us about that a little bit later. So, how did y'all happen to get there? What led you up to Whispering Oaks in Oxford, Florida?
Well, I hadn't been to Florida before, and Johannes Vanderway, that's the owner, he was a blueberry grower, and of course they had some market issues a few years ago with an oversupply of blueberries and not much value in that crop. And so that's when he started thinking about a winery. And then it was much longer that they contacted me about helping them with their winery operations. So having not been to Florida, it sounded intriguing and interesting. And I'm a fan of of fruit wines, and blueberry is of particular interest, although I definitely like my grape wines as well. So I thought I'd come out and help them get going.
You and I were talking, I just mentioned that we just met Tuesday, and I asked you what your background was, and you started telling me, and I said, oh, wait, you know, tell me on the show, because from what you were saying, you have yourself quite an extensive background and quite a lot of traveling and knowledge in winemaking.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I've been doing it for a number of years, a bit over 20. I went to UC Davis, and after that, I was in the PhD program, actually, but I got lured away to be a winemaker for a while in Washington State and New Zealand and Australia. And then academia kind of lured me back again. So I was a consulting winemaker and went to England and taught at Plumpton College, where they have a pretty good program, cool climate program. And then I was with the USDA in Armenia, and I was a winemaker in China and various other locations as well.
Wow. So do you speak all those languages, or did you have someone standing next to you interpreting every time?
Yeah, usually, well, I mean, some of those places, English is a second language, and you can get around pretty well. In China, it wasn't very common where I was at. It was pretty rural in Sichuan province at the time. So I had translators, and I became pretty good at speaking and understanding Mandarin, not reading it, but I could get around. I was there for 4 years.
Wow.
I'm actually doing a bit more over there now. I'm part of the Ningxia Winemakers Challenge. There's, I think, 43 or 48 winemakers from around the world, and I'm one of four from the U.S. who's partaking in this challenge in Ningxia province, an up-and-coming and pretty high-quality region in China. And so we're making, all of us are making Cabernet Sauvignon to the best of our ability with various wineries there. And there are quite a few. And actually, I'll be headed back there on the 15th of February for a few weeks.
Wow. That sounds exciting. Well, a little bit more. I hadn't heard of this. What is this challenge? What's the end results? Trying to find the best Cabernet, and then that's what they're going to use? Or what's the end game on this?
Well, it's a bit of marketing for their region. I think it works pretty well. It gets some foreign winemakers who may not have much experience or idea of what China is, or even what wine in China is about. And they come home having experienced the region and the wines that are being produced and perhaps can be produced. And, of course, then there's also some technology exchange, particularly from the West to the East, although, you know, China's pretty flush with, or has been pretty flush with cash. They have some pretty nice top-of-the-line, high-end stuff and equipment over there.
Hmm. Now,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, go right ahead. You were continuing.
Well, I was just gonna say I had worked in Armenia for a year with the USDA and the U.S. Embassy, helping their sector after they had some issues with Soviet Union, their main market, and having gone there from China, where there was all of that modernization going on and lots of stainless steel and technology being introduced. Going to the birthplace, Georgia and Armenia, really kind of the origin of Vitis vinifera as far as we know right now, you know, that whole Mesopotamia region and
right.
Iran as well, they were so relatively far behind in terms of the technology. Now, you could argue that they had a technology that was working for them, but they had a lot of older Soviet mass production techniques and technologies that didn't lend them very well to Western styles or marketability. So it was very interesting going from China, which was kind of the new world or the new old world, to Armenia and Georgia, which was the old world. and seeing that huge difference in terms of what they were doing and the technologies that they had.
Wow, fascinating. We talked about China on the program quite a bit about how large the wine industry is there and how much it's exploding. So I didn't realize, though, that they were bringing people in and doing all sorts of stuff like that. I guess it's just all part of their explosion to introduce everyone to it.
I lived there 1999 to 2003, and at that time, quality was pretty poor across the board. I mean, even with some of the foreign-owned wineries that were there, it was generally fairly abysmal, the quality, but from what I've been trying more recently, it's changed considerably, and there's some world-class, or will be some world-class wines coming out of China. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Oh, that's exciting. That really is. If you go over there again, bring me back a Chinese bottle of wine. I'll come up and pick it up from you.
See what I can bring back.
Yeah, let me know. Email me and let me know if you get one. I'd love to try one of those.
Okay.
Tell about it on the program here. Tell everybody about it. So you got yourself quite a background in winemaking, and so Florida just beckoned to you, and so that's why you came here then.
Yeah, a bit. There was also a major change in my life. Before this, I was a professor at Texas Tech and Texas A&M universities, where I started their enology program in 2007. Before that, I taught at UC Davis and started their wine certificate program. But I went to Texas to lead that program, and it was kind of a new region for the U.S. that was intriguing and exciting to me, and kind of helping to lead the extension side on enology and having teaching and research expectations I really, really enjoyed. However, you know, in 2012, 2013, they were feeling financial difficulties that many other states had felt just a little bit later after the slowdown occurred in the economy. And they withdrew a lot of their funding toward the viticulture and enology program and from a lot of the ag sector as well. So all of the viticulture advisors, 90% of them were laid off, and unfortunately my program was eliminated as well. So I started looking at consulting.
Wow. So, wow, I didn't realize that Texas went through that issue so badly there, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, they just started hiring again. So they just hired 3 new viticulture advisors to start filling those roles.
Oh, so it's back up again. Good. So you came down here. How long have you been here in Florida, or at Oxford and at Whispering Oaks?
About a year, for the most part. Spend most, I guess, more of my time here than elsewhere at the moment.
Yeah. I had a great opportunity to talk with your wife for a while, Bea. Does she travel with you all these places, or is she pretty much stuck here in Florida while you go to China?
She had traveled with me.
Good.
I met her, and she's Thai, so I met her in Thailand when I was working in Asia. And she moved around with me to China and various places. So now we're spending quite a bit of time here in Florida.
Very good. Whispering Oaks Winery. Well, to start with, I had an opportunity to see the winery, but the listeners have not. You use, I noticed, stainless steel tanks. Any oak, anything you add to it, or is everything all stainless steel?
We do have oak. We have used oak at the moment. I retired most of the oak we had, and I'm looking to get some replacement oak barrels. So, yeah, for our oak barrel reserve, we use a bit of oak. And blueberry is interesting in that regard. I think it can make a wide range of styles pretty easily. You probably, maybe you've talked about this on your show, I don't know. But In a dry style, it often can be similar in flavor and profile to like a Merlot, and I've often put it in judgings or in my trainings with students and industry people, dry blueberry wine that has a bit of oak to it, and they don't usually, well, nobody has yet identified it as a fruit wine without
pausing.
But if there's a little bit of residual sugar in it, well, then all that fruit just kind of pops back out, and you don't mistake it for a Merlot. You wonder maybe perhaps what fruit, but it doesn't take long to get around to it being blueberry. So I like that aspect of it, that it has such a versatility in terms of styles.
And, you know, I had a chance to taste all of them. Well, I'm going to let you go. Let's go down the list of your wines and, you know, tell me each a little bit about each one of them. The Delightfully Dry. Tell us about that wine.
Well, the bulk of my tankage is about 12 tons or 12,000 liters. And so I try to fill, we kind of do batch processes. So I fill them up and I ferment them all a little bit differently, different yeast and temperatures. And I try to get, depending on the fruit coming in, what it's like, I try to shuttle them into different categories. But in the end, I have all of these slightly different batches or majorly different batches. And so the slightly dry is one that has, could have up to 20% oak barrel in it, or new oak wood in it.
Oh.
It may have a little bit of residual sugar. The blueberries I've noticed in Florida have quite a bit of acidity that can be challenging to get low enough that it's easy to balance without having a little bit of residual sugar behind it. The dry is our driest wine, but it's not always technically dry. And that usually is less than 1% sugar for it to be a technically dry wine. So that makes up about... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You.
I was just going to mention that's about, I think it's about 10% of our production. So, I mean, the market, and we're a market-driven winery. We have to be sustainable, so we have to cater to our market, and that is usually a little on the sweeter side. So we have other styles that have more sugar.
Right. When the blueberries come in, do you pop it into your mouth to see, you know, get yourself an idea of what you're going to do with a batch or something, or are you just, you go right to the machines and test them?
Oh, I believe in smelling and tasting over the chemistry. I like chemistry, and that's certainly part of my background, but it's more about the flavor and how to blend and work with that. And so we work with basically five different varieties, Emeralds and Windsors and a few others, but the Emeralds and Windsors probably make up the majority of our blueberries. And so they're different sizes, but basically they're all field blended. And so it's a blend of those different varieties for the most part. And that's pretty much how many growers do these. And if we're buying, we now are so large that we can't just satisfy our needs with what we're growing on our farm, which is about, it's a 65-acre farm, but it's about 20 acres under blueberry bushes. So it's not sufficient to meet our needs. So we're buying blueberries, Florida blueberries, on the open market.
Oh, wow. How many, when grapes, we figure, what, about 5 ton per acre on grapes when they're mature. Blueberries, what are you getting per acre on those on average?
Yeah, it's about the same. It's about 5 tons per acre.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. So you've made
and
your delight.
About 2 years as well.
Go on.
Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to mention that just like in grapes, it takes about 2 years for the bush to mature and produce a crop as well.
Oh, wow. Has the weather we've had, the lot of rains we've had over the last couple years, has that affected the crop any?
No, and in fact, with our, well, not, I wouldn't say our crop. And I haven't been around long enough to, here in Florida, to know how it affected all those prior harvests. But, I mean, with the soil, sandy soils, we typically are irrigating throughout anyway.
Wow.
Because the water drains so quickly.
I know. This sandy soil in Florida just sucks it right up. So you've made your delightfully dry. Then the wildly mild. Now, I have to make a point on this wildly mild here. B told me that this was your big seller here. She said that a lot of people love this wildly mild. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, that's about 25% of our production, roughly. And that's a solid wine. Has a bit more acidity, and to balance that, it has a bit more sugar to balance that. So we're talking blueberries. Unlike grapes, where you have sufficient sugar at harvest, hopefully, to make, you know, a 10% to 13% wine, being a fruit wine, it only has enough sugar to make essentially cider strength, you know, 5 to 6%. So we have to chaptalize and add a lot of sugar in order to get the alcohol that we want. And that's kind of a blending decision as well. What alcohol best blends that final product. And so we're still, having been open a year and 3 months, we're still, I think, trying to fine-tune the alcohols that we want. But we want a relatively consistent. And so the mild has quite a bit of color and a bit of tannin backbone. The dry does as well, but it has a bit more acidity and a bit more sugar. So, I mean, they're all similar. They're all blueberry, but some may have more acidity, some may have more tannin, some may have more sugar to balance that acidity.
I noticed all of them are right around 12%, too, when I was there. All of your wines are right in that mid-range.
Well, I mean, labeling, it's plus or minus 1.5%, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you don't go over a tax category. So our sangria makes up another 25% of our production, and that I like to produce at, well, traditional ranges, so under 12%, and it ranges between 10.5% and 11.5% typically.
Mm, okay. The sangria is very good. I had the sangria, and that's very good. It's not what... And let me explain to people, the sangria is not what you would picture your big fruity pot of this and a pot of that and all that type sangria. It had the sweetness, but had this blueberry that came out with some nice, citrus
Yeah, we use grapefruit and tangerine.
Is that it?
For the most part.
Uh-huh. So that was very good. The sensationally sweet, that's the one I bought. Actually, that's the one I'm drinking right now during the program. And the sensationally sweet is also right at 12%. I looked at the wildly mild and I was going to get that. Then I looked at the sensationally sweet. I tasted that. And the name, I think, is misleading because you say sensationally sweet. And you expect this slap-in-the-face blueberry sweetness, and it's not. It's rather intense blueberry flavors, but not this intense blueberry sweetness.
Okay. Well, it's right around 6% sugar.
Is it?
So it's definitely in the sweet category. It just has a lot of acidity behind it. It's also at about, that one is pushing 12, it's almost 13% alcohol.
Oh, isn't it? It's just, it's balanced though enough that the sweetness is, I don't know, I It's not overpowering on the sweetness, though. I'm getting a lot of the blueberry. I'm getting a lot of the blueberry flavors and taste. Same thing? I'm going to ask my engineer here, my wife. What? I'll see if, you know, natural blueberry. She's saying it's just like a natural blueberry, like popping some blueberries in your mouth. And blueberries, I don't know, I guess maybe because we're used to Florida blueberries, we don't get that real, real sweet. It's that little bit of acid bit that blueberries tend to give you when you bite into them. And, the sensationally sweet is very, very good. It's a very interesting wine with a lot of great blueberry flavors and taste on it. And she just says the best blueberry wine she's ever had, with apologies to Kill and Curly. But but yes, it's very, very good. You said the residual sugar is over 6 on that, though. Boy, that is deceiving.
It's at 6%.
Right at 6? It's deceiving because I make a strawberry port that is right at 6, and this doesn't really strike me as being as sweet as my port, and yet they're both... I know it's sweet, but I'm not getting that... I don't know. Maybe my taste buds are crazy the last couple of days or something, but... I'm not getting that overpowering. I just think it's the well balanced characteristics that you brought out on it, and I think that's what's so good about it, because it's not making it sweet, and so. But it is very good.
Well, we do make sweeter wines. The cha-cha chocolate, sangria. Well, the sweet, I don't know. It ranges between 5.5 and 6, but the sangria hovers more closely to 6. The mild is around 4 to 5. It varies. But the cha-cha chocolate that we're producing, that's quite a bit sweeter. Yep.
Tell us about the cha-cha chocolate, and now that was fun. You picked that glass up and hold it up to your nose, and it smells like you're sniffing chocolate in the glass. It really is. It really was fun. Tell us about your cha-cha chocolate.
Well, that was just kind of a fun experiment. We had here's another grower not far from us, and he has some dealings in the Dominican Republic, some chocolate growers down there, and so he brought some samples up and. Let's try it. And at the time, I wasn't that interested in flavored products, but we started talking about chocolate wine and how they're doing in the marketplace. And so I thought, well, I better go out and try some of the chocolate wines that were out there. And I was actually impressed. It surprised me. I didn't expect to appreciate them. And I thought they were relatively tasty. So I thought, well, boy, if that works for who knows what grape variety, I know it would work pretty well with blueberry. And so we played around with different types of chocolates and came up with a recipe that's in the bottle right now, which I think is pretty good. And then we also fortified a bit. So that one's at just under 14%, at 13.9%.
Hmm.
And we actually use a Florida citrus brandy spirits, neutral brandy spirits, but I think you can. There's a little bit of a citrus character that comes through. Anyway, I think it turned out fairly nice. Now, hopefully, we can reproduce that with bigger batches going forward.
It's very good. The chocolate comes out in the nose. You can taste it, but again, I didn't realize the alcohol was that high. The alcohol wasn't that pronounced in the taste. Is that the blueberries were balancing that, I suppose, is what calls that?
Blueberries, and there's a lot of sugar in there.
Mm. Yeah, the sugar will cut down that. So, yeah, but that cha-cha chocolate was very interesting also. That just the nose on that was just quite exciting. Well, I lost my train of thought right then. Mike, do you have any questions for Brent here?
Not yet. I'm still, I was looking at the website, just curious about the events, but I guess we'll get to that in a little bit. Like your, I'm looking on here and you have photos from your Harvest Festival, which looks very interesting. They're stomping grapes. So when we get to that point, looks interesting. So I guess when we get to that point, we'll maybe we'll talk about your events and everything that, that you have going on there. So, yeah, other than that, that's it.
The tasting room itself has a nice little, well, tables and a little kitchen, not kitchen, but dining area to the side. Was that something that you guys are going to be pursuing, or is that just a area for people to sit and enjoy a few little snack foods? I noticed you had a small menu there of different things. What is it looking at doing actual wine and food pairings there, or are you just offering that as a side?
I would like to do that, or like to see them do that, and maybe hopefully that'll be something that happens in the future. But as a new startup, and for the most part it was self-funded by the owner, it's been going through a few growing pains. We're growing very fast, and some of that has suffered a little bit. So we haven't done all those pairings and a lot of that marketing. We've been focusing on making product and getting it into the marketplace, like fresh markets. But we do have a small restaurant. They're making flatbreads there. I think there's 8 different types of flatbreads that they offer, and I think that may expand in the future. I'm not sure where we'll ultimately take that, but yeah, having a bit of food to go with the wine, I think help people stick around and enjoy it. And then there's music on the weekends, and as we get into spring and summer, that usually starts on Fridays and goes through Sunday with music. And the website's the best place to go for that, to see who's playing.
We've got a big area there that's, you know, great for parking and all that. And a nice little area out in the back there, too. A little waterfall and nice tables. A great spot. In fact, when I was there, you had people that were back there and enjoying the ambiance and the great weather we were having Tuesday. And so it's fantastic for that. And I have to mention this, driving in, there's a little sign, Happy Goat Crossing, and I noticed there's goats all over the place. Is that the owner's venture there, or I noticed you had some goat cheese available in the tasting. Is that going to be incorporated any more into the winery in the future here?
That's something a lot of us are excited about. The goats are actually the farm managers. Goats, and we have a lot of mark or pressings, blueberry skins and pulp that we press off. And when we were first starting, it was small enough volumes that the goats enjoyed it, and that made for happy goats and yielded little goats as well, as might happen when people animals get a bit of that stuff in them. I like to think of it though as marinating from the inside, and barbecues can be good. So those harvest parties can lead to some yummy things.
Yeah, a lot of goats around there. That was pretty cool seeing all the little goats around and everything. Not great big goats. Not the you know don't picture telling people don't picture. Great big goats. These are all little cute happy goats. Call them there. Why start talking about goats and I forgot something else again there. So let's go on to this music and stuff like that, events and everything that you're looking at doing. Are these have you got yourself things scheduled for the summer, or is this something that you haven't really looked at completely yet and it's in the planning stage? What are we doing here?
as we grow, we would like to start having bigger events and music festivals and arts festivals. I would like to see that, and I know the owner would be interested in that, and is, I believe we're pursuing it, but we don't have anything lined up as yet. They do some weddings and receptions, but again, we have, apart from our big events, like the Harvest Party and our anniversary, we have the weekend small venue music performers just providing ambiance.
Hmm. Is that, you have just a musician that comes in, or do you have local talent?
There's local talent and various musicians that come. I'm not always here on the weekend if I can help it, so I don't always pay as much attention to that, but that's available on the website, the Whispering Oaks website.
Also, too, I noticed I met you and B, and was that your assistant I also met?
Yeah, Damien. Yep, he's Damien, my seller assistant.
Yeah, how many other people besides the three of you work there on the all the operations?
Well, on the production side, it's basically Damien and me, and sometimes we have other help that comes in. Like when the process improves, we may have another person, or for bottling, we may have a couple other people. But for the most part, it's a two-person show for right now. We're looking to double our production or triple it in the next year, and then hopefully that'll change and we'll get some additional people. On the hospitality side, that's changing as well. We have, I believe it's five folks at the moment, just recently working in the tasting room. One of those is being my wife.
Oh. So, wow, okay. Were you going to have to pick up production there? I mean, when I was there, you were showing me your monoblock, and you said you're going to get one much larger. So it would pretty much dictate that you and Damien trying to do that by yourself would be overwhelming. So,
right, right. Yeah, no, we'll have to build a new winery for that.
Yeah. The blueberry picking. Who do you have a crew that comes in and does that and gets everything ready for you, or how is the picking done and so you can get it into tanks?
Right. Yeah, we have guest workers. We usually bring them through. There's an outfit in Ocala and other places that helps orchestrate that. But yeah, there's a lot of guest workers. Typically Hispanic that move with the crops and the blueberry season from basically central or southern Florida. They keep moving up north through Georgia and further on up into Maine and so forth and Wisconsin and Michigan.
Oh, wow.
But they start in Florida where the first domestic blueberry crop comes off.
When is your harvest? That shouldn't be too far away.
Nope, it's we're looking toward it now, and that's usually May, end of April and into May. And we also open it up to UPIC, so people can come out and go through the farm and pick their own blueberries if they like.
Oh, very good. Well, you mentioned that you have different types of blueberries. Is there any one particular field or area that makes for a better eating blueberry than another?
Well, there's some that I like that more so than others. Some are large, and while they're refreshing and crisp and juicy, I think others have a bit more tannin and flavor, color, and other things that I like as well. I mean, they're all tasty. Some I like more than others, and we have our farm separated so that you can try the differences and pick in a certain area if you like that variety more than another.
Oh, well, that would be good. Yeah. Mike, Any questions?
No, I'm just everything's good. Just enjoying it. Yeah, taking notes.
taking notes. I know you always do, and tweet and everything else. Brent, let's. Mm-hmm. I want you to pass on all the information about Whispering Oaks Winery, phone numbers and emails and Facebook and everything. So if anyone would like to get a hold of you, if anyone has any questions, if anyone likes to check you out, give us all the information so people can contact you if they desire.
Oh, let me see here. I'll have to pull that up. I just came from our Cub Scout meeting, and I don't actually remember the winery's phone number here. Let me see if I can pull it up. But our website, I believe, is winesofflorida.com, www.winesofflorida.com, or Whispering Oaks Winery, Florida. There are other Whispering Oaks around the U.S., and there's a Facebook page as well. And you can also see events on that Facebook page.
And the address, 10934 North County Road 475, that is off of Interstate 75. In what county are you there? Lake?
Sumter County.
Sumter, okay. In Sumter County, just actually west of the Villages, just north of the Florida Turnpike, and that area there, and west of I-75, about a mile, 2 miles from I-75, going west. And then it's just right through to about a mile and a half from going north from there. Very easy to find. It's Oxford is the name of the town. Phone number is 352-748-0449. If you want to get I have your flyer here. You have your flyer. I'm cheating here. It is a great place. It really is. It's very, very easy to find. It's 44, exit 329, just north, like I say, of Florida Turnpike, exit 329. Go west on 44 to 475, and what is that, County Road 475? County Road 475. And they're on your left, very easy to find, very, very nice place. You go through this real nice gate and barrels on it. You can't miss it. And you can see
where all my barrels went.
That's where all your barrels went. I noticed that as I was driving out the other day. I'm saying, wow, there's a lot of barrels out there on that. But all along the fence there. And you can see the goats as you go in. And nice winery. B is such a sweetheart behind the counter there. She we'll take care of you and help you. $5 to taste all the wines, and it is worth doing that because they are all really interesting and really fascinating. And maybe if you're lucky, you might catch Brent up there instead of hiding back in the barrel room or something. And
sure.
It's a great place, and you know, I can see nothing but you expanding. You got great plans and all that. So you're leaving for China on the 15th, you say?
Right. Uh-huh.
You're going to be gone for
a couple weeks.
Just a couple weeks?
2 to 3 weeks.
Wow.
I got to go back and barrel down the Cabernet that we produced in September.
Oh.
October.
That sounds exciting. That really does. That sounds absolutely. How long will it take you to get? I mean, you leave Oxford, Florida. How long before you're actually with your wine in China?
Last time I think it was about 16 hours.
Oh, my gosh. Traveling the whole time. Well, I don't envy that of you at all. But if you get a chance to bring back any Chinese wines, email me. I'll be happy to come up and pick it up.
Okay.
And, so thank you for taking your time tonight, Brent. Really do appreciate it. Whispering Oaks, best of luck to you up there. If you get a chance, drive down and visit me. I'm only about an hour south of you, so if you get an opportunity,
yeah,
come visit
that.
Me. And hopefully I'll be talking to you sometime in the near future here.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. Thank you, too, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brent. Have yourself a good evening now.
Thank you.
You, too.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye now.
All right. There you go.
Very fantastic. Cool. Boy, I tell you what, he's got himself quite a resume and background of different places he's worked.
Oh, yeah.
That,
absolutely. There's a lot on the website. If you go to winesofflorida.com, there's a section on there that tells all about the travels he's had, all of what he's been involved in. It's very extensive. A lot of contributions, and he's definitely recognized worldwide for his skills and education and everything that he's done in the wine industry. So yeah, it's,
wow,
very nice.
He was setting up. He said he was setting up an enology program in Texas. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
fascinating in itself. That's just
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, very good. Did we get to, maybe I missed it. They're open, did you mention when they're open, 7 days a week, 11 a.m. To 7 p.m.? I don't know
I don't
if
think
that
I
was
did.
Mentioned or
no.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think
so. Yeah, so they're every day, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week up there in Oxford, Florida. Yeah, like you said, it's pretty close to the turnpike. I'm looking at the map here. I was like, I know where that area is. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You know.
Just the next exit right past the turnpike where it hits, where the Florida turnpike hits I-75. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Very interesting. Yeah. And they also have a newsletter as well. So if anybody's going onto their website, sign up for the newsletter. There you go.
Yeah. It's But nice winery, really is. I enjoy it. It's well put together. It's and they got some nice areas there for if you want to sit down and have it. People were up there enjoying the place and just having a great time when I walked in there, and they were having the wine. So wine is very good. It's just he's talking about the residual sugars, but I'll tell you, it's not like I get so many people come into the winery and say, ew, I just don't like real sweet wine. And then they taste like the spice that I have and stuff like that. And they go, well, that's not too bad. That doesn't taste real sweet. That's the way it is with his. It's they're sweet, but you don't get that sensation of sugary, syrupy sweetness out of them. And it's just really nice to have a nice blueberry. And you're getting the taste and smells of blueberry, but he does
have
a good job.
Did you try the chocolate, or you didn't, or that's still in production?
I did.
You said
he had it available, and I did try it, and a very, very chocolatey nose on that. I mean, it was just you put your nose into the glass, and it was just like somebody melted chocolate in the glass. It jumped out of the glass, the chocolatey did, but the taste was balanced well, and he was saying it's real high sugars, but with the chocolate and the blueberries and all that, I guess maybe chocolate you expect to be sweet anyway, and so therefore it wasn't like an overpowering sweetness because the chocolate was already there. But he said he'd had some chocolate wines. I've had some chocolate wines too, and the chocolate wines I've had, most of them have tasted like chocolate milk with alcohol in it. And, really, I wasn't real impressed with some of them. But his chocolate wine had a nice chocolatey nose and then the blueberry chocolate blend. What is those, and I don't know the company, and I'm not trying to make an advertisement. What company is it that makes the chocolate-covered blueberries? All kinds of berries. Yeah. I can see the little bags too. I'm talking to my engineer here. I can see the little bags.
For gifts?
I'm sorry.
It's like for giving gifts or something. They do.
Yeah, they're in stores and stuff like that, and it's just they're little bags, and they got chocolate covered, just about everything, mm-hmm. but blueberry berries and stuff like that, blueberries, and all sorts of different things, and that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of popping one of those in your mouth because you bite into it and you have the chocolate on the outside and the blueberry on the inside. And the blueberry is not the little tartness of a blueberry. It's a very sweet blueberry. And that's what his chocolate wine reminded me of. It just was nice flavors and nice taste, but not overpowering in any way. In fact, most of his wines were really, really pleasant. He does a very nice job. Surprises me. And when he started to tell me his background when I was talking to him the other day, and then a little bit more here, it surprises me that he's doing blueberry. I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, he's doing a great job on it, but you would think with his background and everything else, and somebody say, would you come and do blueberry wine? He's going, ooh, blueberry? But, he says he likes the fruits and he finds it interesting. So, I suppose that expands his resume there, if you will, with that knowledge. So.
Yeah.
Nope. My engineer just told me in the background, she's not much for sweet wines, but she really enjoys this sensationally sweet blueberry wine from Whispering Oaks. But it is very good. I think they can ship too, so check it out on shipping. Hope he brings me back a wine from China. I really
heard that.
Yeah, I hope he does.
I'm sure they have some kind of limit. You have to go through customs. You have to, what are you declaring? Oh. It's like,
the weights and everything else.
Oh,
I'm sure there's going to be a lot involved. I don't expect it, but it would be interesting and surprising if he did.
Yeah. Maybe he could share, if he brings back a bottle, for himself, maybe he could, share you a glass or something. I don't know.
There you go. That would even be happy with that, share a glass of it. And then that way I can still report it to everyone and tell you about it. So
exactly.
That would be fun, too.
Wine from China. Wow.
Wine
as
from
many
China.
Times many times as we've talked about them, you think they just send you something.
You would hope so. You would hope so. Yeah. I don't know. What I'll do is I'll wait until he gets back. He says he's going to be up there 2 weeks. So around the 1st of March, I'll email him and ask him if he knows anybody in China that speaks English that we can possibly call and get on the program.
Okay. That would be interesting.
That would.
Yeah. Okay.
In fact, I might email him before he goes. That's what I'll do. He's not leaving for another week and a half. I'll email him before he goes. And
put a bug in his ear.
Yeah. Put, ask if, while he's there to see if anybody might be willing to be on the program. Somebody from China. That would be fun. And find out what they're doing there. Oh, that's exciting. We'll see if we can't come up with something on that then. I'll email him and thank you for being on the program and say, and by the way.
Yes, as per our conversation.
All right, very good, very good. Well, thank you, Brett, for being on the program. It was fun, it was interesting. And I'll see if we can't get him to find somebody from China for us. So. So next week.
No events.
Brookside.
This weekend.
Yeah, Brookside. Brookside is the name of the company
I was just looking at that. Yeah, they sell. They're like at Walmart and other places. I've seen them over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have all kinds of berries and stuff.
All sorts of berries covered in chocolate.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras. Great opportunity to drink out there. Wine, pop open wine for then Ash Wednesday coming up next Wednesday. But Fat Tuesday, can't think of a better excuse. I mentioned on one of the programs when you were unable to be on the program on a little stress show when you were working, I said the reason we always bring up the holidays coming up is so people will have an excuse to drink. It's not just like, you know, we're promoting holidays. It's like, you know, this is another opportunity to have a bottle of wine. And so that's why we always point out the holidays so that you can say, well, this is for Mardi Gras, or this is for Groundhog Day, or this is for Ash Wednesday, or Lincoln's Birthday. There's always
Gasparilla.
Yeah. Gasparilla. There you go. Yeah. You know.
That should be if that was a national holiday, people could drink worldwide. You know.
Yeah.
Countrywide.
Yeah. There you go. Did you know? I don't know. Let's throw this out for the listeners. The Gasparilla Parade in Tampa, which is held every year, Jose Gaspar, who is actually a fictional pirate who raided Tampa, but the Gasparilla Parade in Tampa is the third largest parade in the country.
No.
Yes. It is third. Number one is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Number two is the Rose Bowl. And the Gasparilla Parade is number three.
Huh. I didn't realize that.
I didn't know it either.
I go to it, but I know there's a lot of people. And I mean, is it is it based on attendance? Is it based on, you know, the fact that it's like 3 or 4 miles long? Or
I think length and attendance, I think, is...
Wow.
Is a criteria. But yeah, it was in the paper. In fact, it was in both local papers, the Tampa Tribune and the Times, the Tampa, what do they call it now? Tampa Times. But it was both of them mentioned that is the third biggest parade in this country.
Wow.
You know, and yet every Thanksgiving we watch the New York Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Every New Year's we see the Rose Bowl Parade. But do they even televise it? No, they don't even televise it live here. We have to watch it in repeats. So doesn't seem quite right to me. But
yeah, let's see. When is so we don't have anything else, nothing this weekend. So we have the next show on the 11th of February.
The 11th, February 11th. So Fat Tuesday, have yourself a safe Fat Tuesday. Ash Wednesday starts, and we'll be back on the 11th next week.
Yeah, keep drinking wine. Everything's good.
That's right. So,
drink wine. We'll see you all next week. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our special guest again, and really appreciate it. Very interesting. We'll see what we can do next week. We'll see you on the 11th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.